Welcome to the Diabetes Canada Healthcare Huddle, a podcast that invites healthcare professionals to listen in on the discussion as we explore a diabetes-related topic. Each episode, we will present a case study, then have a conversation with an expert about the clinical challenge. Finally, we will revisit the case and see how we can apply our new knowledge and tools. My name is Dr. Sarah Stafford. I'm an endocrinologist in Surrey, BC, and I'm joined by my colleague, Gail McNeil, who's a diabetes educator and clinical nurse specialist from Toronto.
Gail is away today, and so we are joined by Candace Akee. Candace is a registered dietitian and manager in the Diabetes Knowledge and Connection team at Diabetes Canada. She's passionate about all things food, nutrition, and health. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And our very special guest today on our discussion of therapeutic diets is Sophia Calamaris. Sophia is a registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator. Sophia has almost 20 years of experience in various areas of dietetics, general nutrition, weight loss, metabolic syndrome, eating disorders, and diabetes. Diabetes is where she has spent practicing the last 16 years of her career. Sophia has always had a passion and a connection with diabetes as her father had type 1 diabetes, and she is very familiar with what someone with diabetes goes through in their day-to-day life and how this affects the whole family. Within her practice, she sees patients with all types of diabetes and with various treatment methods. She strives to help her clients live healthily and achieve their health goals through lifestyle and diet modifications. She is there to support them in their journey to a healthful life. Welcome, Sophia.
Thank you for having me today.
So I think this is a topic that comes up every single day in clinic, in real life, when we're chatting with our friends, on the internet, on social media. So very, very common discussion that we need to have. Candace, I'm sure in your experience, this is something that you've had many conversations about.
Absolutely. Nutrition in general is very complex, and people always want to know what to eat, how to eat. And as a part of the program that I run here at Diabetes Canada, our virtual diabetes education program, it is the number one question. How do I eat to manage my blood sugar? What should I eat? And what's the deal with all of these different types of diets? Will it work for me? Is it safe for me? So this is definitely timely, and I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
Yep, this is definitely something that comes up every day in clinic. And I seem to have patients who come in kind of two cohorts. One that comes in and says, just tell me exactly what I should eat, write a list, and that's what I'm going to eat. And then I have another cohort that comes in and says, hey, I read about this diet or this, you know, way of eating. Should I do that? And what do you think? And it's really challenging to talk about this confidently and with evidence, because it's such a broad area. And, you know, sometimes the evidence is limited, but there's a lot of opinion out there. Sophia, I'm sure this is something that comes up every day, all these different diets and ways of eating that are popular in the public space.
Yes, it is all the time. I get these questions every day, obviously, because we're always talking about food and diet in my line of work. But you're right. People come to you, whether it's, you know, getting this information from a friend, a family member, Google, wherever. And they're just like, how do I make this work? This is what I want to follow. And give me a meal plan that's going to encompass all of these details. Or like you said, they're just like, just tell me what to eat. I don't care. I just want to do that just to make myself healthy, feel better, and do what I have to do.
Absolutely. So it's challenging. And I think the other thing to recognize is we now have some very good guidelines. We have guidelines from Diabetes Canada that talk about the importance of diet and nutrition. We also even have the 2020 Canadian obesity guidelines that highlighted the role of medical nutrition therapy, really thinking it as part of therapy and highlighting the importance of personalized counseling by a registered dietitian with a focus on healthy food choices and evidence-based nutrition therapy. And again, they don't specify what type of per se diet, right? They just say medical nutrition therapy. So do you think, should we just go through a list of different kind of types of ways of eating that are popular and kind of discuss each one?
Yeah, sure. We can go through some frequently asked diets that I get often. So one that it's been around forever, but I keep getting asked about is the Mediterranean diet. And a lot of people are like, what is it? What does this Mediterranean diet mean? Like, what is it and how can I get it to fit in with my lifestyle? So the Mediterranean diet is basically a balanced way of eating, but it's highlighted or heavy on fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts and seeds, olive oil. It's moderate in dairy and fish and chicken and very low in meat products. So being like that, this diet is it's balanced, first of all, because you're really not missing out any food group. They're all there. But the other good thing is that it's high in like the healthy fats, like the monounsaturated fats that are good for your heart. And they really fill us up. They're high in fiber. So again, fill us up. They help us with blood sugar control. And with all of this, it helps reduce heart disease and stroke, as well as helping with our blood sugar control as well. And they're nutrient dense. So it's not like you're having like empty calories that you get from fast foods, but they really are real healthy, wholesome foods. So that one, I find a lot easier to help people incorporate into their diet, into their lifestyle.
Yeah, I also like talking about the Mediterranean diet because I find it's quite intuitive, because a lot of it is talking about eating whole foods, more plant-based diet, avoiding processed foods, and then healthier sources of protein. And so I think it's one that's very approachable for many people. Yes. Sometimes, you know, depending on different cultures, it might be culturally a little bit more difficult to apply. I have a large South Asian community, right? And so trying to give them advice that aligns with that way of eating, but within a South Asian, you know, diet is a little bit challenging, right?
Yeah. But at least it's not that you're like missing out certain food groups. So you can make it align with many different other ethnicities that, you know, you can just focus on more legumes and more vegetables, but tailor the vegetables to that ethnic group or to that family, that what they eat and what they don't eat.
So the other thing I find is that the Mediterranean diet is very simple to incorporate into diabetes management from a safety perspective, because it's really a very balanced diet. It's just shifting the way of eating. So really a nice one to be able to use that's kind of doesn't require any modification to most diabetes medications, aside from moving to a healthier way of eating. Similar to the Mediterranean diet, another popular one out there is the DASH diet that has some good evidence of cardiovascular benefit. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and that diet's been around for not as long as the Mediterranean diet as well. It's very similar, where it is high in fruits and vegetables and whole grains. So that part is very similar to it. It's similar, but some little very differences, but it is high in potassium, magnesium. So it has a lot of that heart health benefit, as well as the blood pressure benefit as well. It's a very balanced diet, where it does include all your fruits, all your vegetables. It doesn't miss out any major food groups. So just similar to the Mediterranean diet.
Perfect. Let's talk about one more that's been around for a long time, vegetarian or vegan diets.
Yes. And I'm finding I'm getting a lot more questions about these vegetarian vegan diets. Normally, when people come in and they say, I want to follow a vegetarian diet, they're thinking completely plant-based, so a vegan diet. And those are great diets as well, because again, it can be balanced. But the only thing with the vegetarian diet is making sure that you do speak to a dietitian to make sure you're doing it in a balanced manner. Because often when they hear plant-based or vegetarian, a lot of people just completely cut out the food group of where you're getting most of your protein from, which is any kind of animal product, any kind of chicken or fish or red meat, dairy. And then I find they're eating a lot of vegetables, which is great, and a lot of grains. And then they're finding they're lacking in the protein source. But we can get so many good, healthy proteins from our plant-based proteins. And that is where I want to make sure that if they do want to follow a vegetarian diet or vegan diet, they make sure that they are including a good source of protein in with their diet at every single meal. And we can get that to be very balanced as well.
Perfect. And I think that to me is one of the keys with the vegetarian diets is, you know, sometimes people will kind of jump into that way of eating. And I think it is one that needs some research to ensure that you're not missing any essential nutrients, and including some foods that you might not eat on a regular basis before you move into that way of eating.
Yeah, exactly. But if it's done in a very balanced manner, it is going to be very high in fiber and antioxidants because of the whole grains and the fruits and the vegetables. And because it is high in fiber and the grains that we're choosing and the legumes that are lower on the glycemic index, they really do help stabilize our blood sugars and even improve our blood sugars at times.
Perfect. So now, you know, there's a couple out there that are really popular in social media and discussion nowadays. So let's talk about intermittent fasting first. I have lots of patients who come in and tell me I'm doing intermittent fasting. And so then the first thing I ask is, what do you mean by that? Because intermittent fasting to some people means not eating after dinner. And to some people, it means a 16-8 or different ratios of eating. So what is intermittent fasting and how might somebody do that?
That's exactly right. I ask the same question. What do you mean by intermittent fasting? Because some people are just, I'm not eating after dinner and that is it. And if you do, let's say stop after dinner, let's say dinner is at 7 o'clock and then you eat breakfast at seven, then you're fasting a good 12 hours. So that could technically be a fast. But some people think fasting would be, I'm not eating anything until a certain amount of time. And everybody has a different rule that they want to follow, whether it's skipping breakfast, having lunch, or skipping breakfast and lunch and only having a small window of time that you are eating. So I really ask what they mean by it and then see if it makes sense. And if they have tried it in the past, I ask them how they're feeling, because you have to make sure within this intermittent fasting, you're getting all of your nutrients that you do need to survive and you're not missing anything. And if you are taking any kind of medications for blood sugar control, we want to make sure that you're not at risk for having any kind of low blood sugars. So looking to see if it actually is the right diet for you. Are you missing any nutrients? Are you eating enough? And also, if your window of eating is so small, are we eating a lot of food in a small period of time that it may be affecting our digestion and it's hard on our bodies to handle? So really looking at what they mean and making it fit into that lifestyle that they want. And, you know, some people are just, I want to do it. I really want to try it, but maybe making it a modified. So if they have a very specific window that is very small, maybe asking them a few questions. How do you feel? Are you hungry? Are you eating a lot more at the end of the day? And what these foods are? Because often when we're hungry, we really don't care what we're eating. And even though you're following this fast, we might be eating the wrong types of food. But if it is done properly, you can still have a very balanced diet. And often the purpose of this is to help improve insulin sensitivity and to help with weight loss, because you are essentially cutting down calories by missing out on that first meal. But we want to make sure that it is done safely.
Yeah. So I think there is some good evidence out there that intermittent fasting is effective for weight loss for some individuals and improves glycemic control. But you highlighted two main kind of challenges from a safety perspective. So the first one, hypoglycemia. I think that's something I always try to talk to people about. If they're on insulin or sulfonylurea, then your increased risk for hypoglycemia with a prolonged period of fasting. So we might need to modify their medications. I might be stopping their sulfonylurea, adjusting their insulin, maybe adjusting the timing of their insulin. It might be a good role for a continuous glucose monitor to see what's happening during that period of fasting. Are they dipping low? So I think really that's the key kind of risk that I make sure I discuss with patients who are talking about intermittent fasting, is the risk of hypo if they're on medications. And then the second one is that when you're breaking the fast, right? You know, what are you eating at that time, and making sure that those choices are good. Because if you just kind of move breakfast into a really big lunch, we haven't actually made that progress that we want to see. So being really mindful about those two challenges.
Yeah. And then also, like you said, not just the risk of hypoglycemia, but when you do break that fast, how much am I eating, and what is happening to my blood sugars with that quantity of food that I'm eating?
Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a role, and I have had some patients who have had great success with intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. I've also had quite a lot of patients who've done it for a while and then moved on. And that's, I think, to me, the other challenge is that way of eating sustainable with your lifestyle? And for some people it is. And for some people, it might prove to be a real challenge.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So the other one out there, a lot of discussion happening is around this concept of low carb and keto. And I have lots of people, same thing. They come in and they say, I'm keto. And my very first question is, what does that mean to you? Because keto itself, and you can expand on this, but really requires a very significant restriction in carbohydrate intake that actually requires quite a bit of effort because there's a lot of carbs hidden in foods that people don't, you know, think about. But low carb is a different concept as well. So let's talk about that one.
Yeah. So there is a difference between low carb and keto. So low carb can really mean anything between 100 and down to like 50 grams of carbs per day. So that would be what a low carb meal is. Keto is very different because that is a very low carb diet where it's between 20 to 50 grams of carbohydrates a day. So if we think about what a typical carb serving is when we're teaching carb counting, it's about 15 grams of carbs is one serving, which is like one piece of bread. So if you imagine that you're only allowed to have 20 grams of carbs per day in a keto world, that if you're thinking about other sources of carbs, which are fruits and starchy vegetables, not just the grains, that's very hard to get to. So low carb, I find easier to help incorporate into people's diet if they're really wanting to do it, because we can make it balanced and we can make it safe for the same things we talked about with the intermittent fasting, that if you are on certain medications like the sulfonylureas and the insulins, you could have a low blood sugar if you're following a low carb or very low carb diet, but it is doable on a low carb diet. Versus keto is a very low carb diet, but it's also high in fat and a moderate amount of protein. So that's where, you know, we're really looking at the health benefit, like the total health. And keto puts your body into ketosis. And that's where it's really working on burning the fat. And ketosis, as we know from diabetes, is not something we want to strive for. We want to avoid people from going into ketosis because it's a very dangerous acidic state, mostly in people with type 1, but we have seen it in some people with type 2 as well. So if they're very adamant about doing it, there is ways we can help them do it, but help them do it safely and maybe avoiding that dangerous DKA ketoacidosis.
Yeah, and I think that's the key safety risk that I try to highlight for people with type 1 diabetes who bring up the idea of keto, is I'll say, you know, you already know that if you have a state of relative insulin deficiency, you can go into DKA, and DKA is very dangerous. And if you bring yourself into ketosis by diet changes, your margin of error is even smaller to fall into DKA, the slightest kind of missed insulin dose, mild illness. You might have been able to kind of get away with that in kind of your usual diet, but if you're already in ketosis and then there's a trigger for a DKA, well, you might have been okay under other circumstances, but now that your margin for error is so small, you can kind of flip into DKA very easily. And I've definitely seen that happen in people with type 1 diabetes who've tried keto diets. I know it's something out there. I know that there are social media groups and other groups that are keen on it. And in the end, people will make their own decisions about how they want to eat. But I think understanding the potential risks is very important, especially for the type 1 population.
Yes, that's right.
Now, coming back to low carb, you know, maybe can you just tell us, like, the average North American diet, just as a ballpark, how many grams of carbs a day, just in the average North American diet, what do you think it is?
Definitely more than 100. So I'm finding people, like, if you're thinking about a typical meal, may have about 40, 50 grams of carbs per meal. And if we're eating about three meals a day, that's 150 plus a snack here or there. We're easily getting about 175 to 200 grams of carbs per day. And that is on the lower end. I often see people eating a higher amount of carbs, like, you know, maybe even 100 grams of carbs per meal, because it's easy to do. So going down to like that 100 grams, even though it seems like it might be doable, is a big change from something that, you know, if it's 100 to 200 grams per day.
So the reason I ask that, because I have a lot of people, they come in and say, oh, I want to be low carb, but I don't know what to do. And you can tell me if I'm way off base, but what I'll say to them is, if you were to cut in half the amount of carbs that you have with your average meal, there's a good chance that you would be getting towards low carb, but in a more manageable way. And you probably wouldn't be anywhere near keto, but it would be a dramatic reduction in your carbohydrate intake, enough that you would likely see an impact. Do you think that's something that would be feasible? You know, half the carb portion with your meal and replacing that with vegetables or fruit or healthy proteins. What do you think about that approach?
I think that's a perfect approach, because at least it's taking what they're currently eating and then just decreasing it a little bit. We're not completely changing their diet and making turning everything upside down. It's just taking what normal foods are eating and cutting it back. And it's a good teaching moment, I guess you can say, for portion control.
Yeah. And I think it's also a relatively easier one when we think about medication adjustment, right? Because I'm going to cut in half their carbohydrate intake. Then I may need to cut down again on certainly sulfonylureas or insulin. It kind of gives some guidance. Maybe we'll cut that down by 50% if we're having their carbohydrate intake. So I find that one is a little bit more manageable. And then if they like that, you know, I say, well, then you can potentially make further changes from there. The additional safety one to highlight, I suppose, if people are really heading to low carb or keto, think about the role of SGLT2 inhibitors, because we do know that they can increase the risk of DK. So those might be medications that we want to, at the very minimum, counsel on safety with a low carb diet. And if people are truly going keto, I'll often recommend that we discontinue the SGLT2 inhibitor in that situation.
Exactly. Yep.
So for the person who just comes into clinic and says, I don't know what to do, tell me what I should do. What's your advice for that person?
I usually start off by asking them what they currently do and then what their goal is. So maybe building or making smaller adjustments to their current diet, as opposed to coming in and changing everything. I find they have a better success rate if we're just changing what their current lifestyle is like versus giving them a completely different lifestyle. So for example, if somebody is just vegetarian for whatever cultural reasons or personal reasons, I'm not going to go tell them to do a keto diet and have it full of like animal products. They're not going to follow it. So really looking at what they're currently eating and what their goals are, and then building on that and seeing what are you able to do. And the thing I always tell people is, whatever diet you're choosing, other than safety and, you know, all that kind of stuff, is can you follow this diet for at least 5 years of your life? Because if they can't, this is not going to be the diet for them. And it's just going to be, they're going to feel like they failed. It's not going to be very successful for them. So that's why it's like, what are you doing? Can we follow it? And is it balanced? And then I find it's easier for them to continue.
I think that's a great approach. Candace, does this give you a little more confidence when you have conversations with people about diet? How will this change your approach?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what I'm hearing the both of you say is really that the diet that's going to work best is the one that you can follow, that you can stick with, and that meets your goals and is good for your health and treatment goals as well, right? I really like the concept around starting where that person is and not trying to change everything all in one go. I think that's really important. And definitely, it's definitely aligned with the types of things that I've told clients in the past and that we share with our participants in our virtual diabetes education program as well. Really, you know, work with your healthcare team, and if you can, see a dietitian to really work with you to make those changes one step at a time. So I think this was great. This is exactly the kind of thing we want people to hear about, because there's so much misinformation out there, and we want to make sure people are getting it from a good, credible place.
Perfect. Thank you, Candace, for those thoughts. And thank you so much, Sophia, for joining us and helping us to develop a framework on how to think about these different ways of eating.
Thank you so much for having me.
For those who want more information on this topic, a webinar is available now at guidelines.diabetes.ca/webinars.
Please help us improve our future podcasts by filling out the survey in the show notes. Thanks for joining us today. If you have questions about the episode or about becoming a member of the Diabetes Canada Professional Section, please email professional.membership@diabetes.ca. Special thanks to Adam Humphreys for providing the music for today's podcast.